This podcast is not meant to be professional advice of any kind. It is meant to be informative and entertaining. If you make any changes to your life, see the appropriate professional before you do so. Hello, and welcome to SuperAge. My name is David Harry Stewart. I'm the founder of Ageist. At SuperAge, we help you live better and become the best version of yourself. And who doesn't want a SuperAge? Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode 101 of the SuperAge podcast. This will be dropping on September the 13th, 2022. Today's show is brought to you by Inside Tracker, the dashboard to your inner health. Go to insidetracker.com/ageist, save 20% on all their products. This show is also brought to you by Element, L-M-N-T, my favorite electrolyte mix. It's what I put in my water in the morning, and it's what I put in my water at the gym. Go to drinkelement.com/ageist. Check out the specials that we've arranged for the listeners of this podcast. So this week, I'm thinking a lot about athletes and athletics. And in my career as a photographer, I got to spend a lot of time with very high-level athletes, champions, Olympians, and they're remarkable people. And I get a great deal of inspiration out of their passion, their dedication, and their sense of excellence. I don't know if any of you are tennis fans. I love watching tennis. There's something elegant about it, but there's also something just intensely gladiatorial about it that I think is amazing. It's a beautiful sport. And I'm thinking about Serena Williams, who at 40 years old appears anyway to have retired from tennis. But think about that. She's 40 years old and she was playing at the highest levels of that sport, which would have just been unthinkable a few years ago. And I, you know, watching her play, watching the passion with which she plays, the intensity with which she hits that ball, just, you know, undiminished in the last, and she's played at this level for what, 20, 25 years? It's amazing. And I think that, you know, if we want a metric for how people are aging better and taking better care of themselves, you know, it used to be 30 in that sport would just be ancient. And, you know, we're seeing this more and more in elite athletics, where people take better care of themselves. I mean, Tom Brady, my gosh. You know, admittedly, these are not normal people. I've been around some of them. They're not normal. They're extraordinary, exceptional, like one in a billion kind of people. But still, that an athlete can perform at that level at an age that would have just been unthinkable not long ago, it really bodes well for the rest of us. That, you know, we can see them as sort of a one point on a curve, but that, you know, we have other people who are, you know, we profiled it in Ageist a few months ago, Alan Petrikov at, I believe Alan's 87, 88, doing amazing things in the world of business. He started his like latest company, I think at the age of 85, you know, and I think these things are going to become more and more common. We're seeing the fastest growing segments of the population are at the upper ends, you know, over 90, over 80, over 70, over 60. These are growing much faster than the younger parts. And I think this is all, you know, it's great. We want to live longer, right? Live better, live healthier. But in terms of humanity, in terms of our species out there, if we think of this in terms of knowledge and contribution to society, ability to help other people, this is a really good thing. So if knowledge expires, you know, with, you know, when people die, so they're not able to help other people. So if you die at 75, that used to be, you know, fairly common. But if you're going to live much longer, think of that extra 25 years, how many other people you can help. Think of the extra knowledge that you will accumulate that you will then be able to pass on to other people. And that's what's really exciting to me about the idea of longevity. It's not just, you know, an ego thing, like, oh, you know, we get to live longer. That's great. But what are you going to do with that time? And it, to me, I think we're at this point in human history where, like, what is the developmental stage of people between 100 and 110? Like, we really don't know. There's a, you know, pretty good set of science out there that people go through different phases in life between, you know, 10 and 20 or 30 and 40 or whatever, you know, age you want to pick. But this is sort of new territory. Like, what happens if somebody's, like, healthy and vibrant and they're 100? What is that experience like? And how can that experience be brought to the rest of us? And what can we learn from that? How can we benefit from that? So that's a long way from Serena Williams. But Serena Williams, you are a rock star. You are just, like, one of my heroes. And I'm so appreciate the devotion and the ferocity that you brought to women's tennis. Awesome job. So this week on the show, we're going to talk about nitric oxide. Why do we care about this? Well, nitric oxide, turns out, it's an essential component of how we metabolize. It has a lot to do with our vascularity. And if your hands get cold in the winter, if you have Raynaud's, if you feel that you don't have quite as much energy as you may have had in the past, you want to listen to this. Dr. Bryant is probably the world's foremost researcher on this topic. The solutions are fairly simple, and we're going to go through them. So hang in there. This is going to be a good one. I know some of you out there have Raynaud's disease. You're going to want to hear what Dr. Bryant has to say about this. Just a quick word on this show, too. This is not medical advice. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. The things you hear here are meant to be informational only. If there's some kind of change you want to make to your diet, your behavior, make sure you check with your doctor first. We're going to get with Dr. Bryant in just a second after a quick word from our sponsor. Today's show is brought to you by Inside Tracker. Inside Tracker is the dashboard to your inner health. Just as a car has a dashboard so you can tell how fast you're going and how much gas you have, you need a dashboard for your inner health. You need to know what's going on inside your body if you're going to optimize it. You need some way to monitor what's going on inside your body. And then once you know what's going on inside your body, you need some way to help optimize that. This is what I get from Inside Tracker. With their 43 biomarkers that they're testing, along with the genetics that they test me for, I know what I should be eating to really optimize where I want to be. And I get to choose that target of where I want to be. Am I working on brain health? Am I working on longevity? Is there something with my fitness that I'm interested in optimizing? The app will make recommendations personalized to me based on my blood work and my genetics. And that's something that I just think is invaluable. It's not a replacement for seeing my doctor. It's not a replacement for any of the other professionals in my life. It is an additive, but it is an additive that is with me every day, all day. And I can consult it and I can see what should I be doing right now. And then I can test again and see what changes have happened. If you go to insidetracker.com/ageist, you'll save 20% on all their products. Today's show is also brought to you by Element, the electrolyte mix that I've been using to stay hydrated and to keep my electrolytes in balance. I started placing Element electrolyte mix into my water after my workouts on the recommendation of a friend of mine who's a 50-time Ironman competitor. I told him that I was having a lot of trouble recovering from my workouts, and I thought it was my age. And it turned out it was my electrolytes. And once I started putting Element into my water, I noticed an incredible difference in my ability to recover from my workouts. It went from, I mean, truthfully, an hour or two to like 10 minutes. Because the problem was my electrolytes were off. Now what I do is I put Element in my water when I get up first thing in the morning. I also have it in my water that I drink during the day. And then, of course, at the gym, I make sure that there's Element in my water. And, of course, in my beloved sauna, the same thing, Element in the water. So it turns out that some of that brain fog and just muscle ache and sluggishness that I was feeling was not age-related. It was actually electrolyte-related. We talk a lot about hydration on this podcast, but the electrolyte mix within that water is really critical. Right now, Element is offering listeners of this podcast a free sample pack with any purchase. That's 8 single-serving packets, free with any Element order. It's a great way to try out all 8 flavors and share Element with a salty friend. Get yours at drinkelement.com/aegis. This deal is only available through this link. You must go to drinkelement.com/aegis. We'll be leaving that link in the show notes, too. After you check it out, let me know what you think about it. Did it make the change for you that it did for me? Hey, Nathan, how are you today?
Hey, David, I'm great.
I'm so happy to have you on the show because the topic that you are the world's foremost expert on is something that I find confusing. And I'm hoping that, if nothing else, you can bring clarity to my mind about how this works.
Sure.
And the subject that you are the expert on is nitric oxide. So tell us a little bit, tell us a little bit about your background, and then you can tell us what's nitric oxide.
Yeah, sure. So I've been in academic medicine, basic science research for more than 20 years. I have a degree in biochemistry from the University of Texas at Austin. I then went to LSU School of Medicine, where I got a PhD in molecular and cellular physiology. From there, I trained up in Boston at Boston University Medical Center and the Whitaker Cardiovascular Institute. And then I got my first faculty position at UT Medical School in Houston, where I started my career. And for the past 20 years, I've done nothing but study nitric oxide biochemistry, how the body makes it, what goes wrong in people that can't make it, what are the symptoms or consequences that present as a result of lack of nitric oxide production. And then we've spent, the past 15 years on trying to develop safe and effective therapies or strategies, both nutritional and drug therapies, to restore the production of this molecule called nitric oxide. So it's a signaling molecule. It's produced in the lining of the blood vessels, and it tells our blood vessels to dilate and relax. So it improves oxygen delivery, improves blood flow, decreases inflammation, and just makes everything better. So we know now that, every single chronic disease, whether it's heart disease, Alzheimer's, diabetes, liver disease, lung disease, the common denominator in all of them is decreased blood flow, increased inflammation. And nitric oxide is what controls and regulates both of those. Decreases inflammation, improves blood flow, so that the cells in every tissue and organ in the body can get the oxygen and nutrients they need to do their job.
So help me out here. Are you saying that decrease in nitric oxide is causal, or that it's just related in some way?
Now, there are over 180,000 scientific papers published now on nitric oxide, and the preponderance of evidence is very clear that loss of nitric oxide production is the earliest event in the onset and progression of chronic disease. So it's causal for chronic disease, including cardiovascular disease, the number one killer of men and women worldwide.
Okay, so we're going to pay attention to this. All right, so here I am. How do I make nitric oxide? This seems like a really good thing for me to have.
It is. There's two ways the body makes nitric oxide. So there's an enzyme found in the lining of your blood vessels, and it's an enzyme called nitric oxide synthase. And that enzyme is also found in our brain and the neurons, and it's also found in other cell types. But the role of that enzyme is to convert an amino acid called arginine, L-arginine, into nitric oxide. So it's a very inefficient, complex, complicated reaction. And typically that's what fails the older we get. So the older we get, the less nitric oxide we make through that pathway. And that's what we call endothelial dysfunction. So it's the dysfunction of the endothelial cells, the inability of that enzyme to convert arginine to nitric oxide. So that's number one. That's what fails the older we get. Then the second most recent pathway to be discovered is an interesting pathway because we can use diet. So there's a compound found primarily in green leafy vegetables, and it's called inorganic nitrate. So nitrate is concentrated in things like spinach, kale, arugula, beets have been a popular vegetable. And then when we consume this, 90 minutes after we consume a green leafy vegetable or a nitrate-rich food, that nitrate is taken up in our gut and concentrated in our salivary glands. So now, for the next 6, 8, 10 hours, every time we salivate, we're getting a burst of nitrate in our saliva. And then there are nitrate-reducing bacteria that live on the crypts of the tongue. So then these bacteria use that nitrate as a source of respiration. They reduce the nitrate to nitrite and nitric oxide. So because humans can't metabolize this molecule, we rely 100% on the bacteria. So this becomes really interesting in people with oral infections, people who use mouthwash that disrupt the oral microbiome, kill the good bacteria along with the bad. Now we're finding they become nitric oxide deficient. We and others have published now that people who use mouthwash have higher blood pressure than those who don't, and it puts them at an increased risk for heart attack and stroke.
How are you measuring nitric oxide? Like if I come to you and I say, am I nitric oxide deficient? How do you test that?
Yeah, it's a very good question. In fact, it's been a major challenge in medicine for the past 30 years. Because nitric oxide, when it's produced in the body, it's a gas. And once it's produced, it's gone in less than a second. So there's really no way to measure nitric oxide, the actual nitric oxide production in the human body. Now, we've developed kind of techniques where we can measure these metabolites of nitric oxide in the blood, in the saliva. In fact, I think in 2010, I developed a salivary test strip. So you can apply some saliva to the end of this test strip, and if it turns dark pink, then it tells us that your body has the ability to make nitric oxide. But if it doesn't turn pink, then it tells us that your body can't make nitric oxide, but it doesn't tell us why. So it's been a challenge.
Yeah, but it's telling you that I may have the ability to make the nitric oxide, but it's not telling you that there's nitric oxide in my blood.
That's right. So every compartment is different. You know, the saliva is different than what's in the blood. And what's in the tissues and cells is different from what's in the blood. It's also what's in urine is different than what's in the blood. So you have to measure these different biological compartments to get a really full readout of how your body is making this molecule and how it's metabolizing it, or if it's metabolizing it. So clinically, you can't go to your primary care doc and say, hey, doc, what are my nitric oxide levels? They cannot give you an answer. So it's not like your vitamin D or cholesterol where you can draw blood and you get a number and that number tells you something. Nitric oxide is not like that. I think in the future, we'll have a better understanding of kind of what nitric oxide is and becomes, where you can test these biomarkers in blood and saliva. But really what we rely on are symptoms. So we know that if you have an unsafe elevation in blood pressure, you're nitric oxide deficient. If you have erectile dysfunction, you can't make nitric oxide. If you have exercise intolerance, where you start to exercise and you can't, you're nitric oxide deficient. If you have diabetes and metabolic syndrome, your body's not making nitric oxide. So now when we rely on these symptoms and you start to realize, well, you've got a problem, a vascular problem where your blood vessels can't make nitric oxide, now we need to employ some strategies to get your body making.
So let's talk about that. If because it seems like, and I'm not a scientist here, so forgive me if I make some leaps. So if we can't test for the molecule directly, what we can test for is its secondary effect within the body.
That's right.
So
you can't you can't measure what nitric oxide is, but you can measure what nitric oxide does.
Which is really what I want to know anyway.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Right. Yeah. Like, I don't really care.
Nobody cares what their vitamin D levels are. They want to know how important vitamin D is. And if it's low, you want to figure out how to correct it and normalize it, right?
That's right. 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 The absolute number, who cares? Like, what's the effect? That's what I want to know.
That's right.
So you mentioned this, I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, endothelial pathway dysfunction. And so what would be the ways, let's assume that I have, that I go to see you and you say, okay, you're probably, says I'm 63. So I probably have some like age-related decrease in my ability to make nitric oxide. What do I do?
Yep. Well, it's very simple. You do two things. You stop doing the things that we know disrupt nitric oxide, and you start doing the things that promote it. So let's take those one by one. So the first thing, if you're using mouthwash, you have to stop. Mouthwash is bad news. Clear evidence now increases blood pressure. In fact, if you use mouthwash and exercise, you lose the cardioprotective benefits of exercise. So mouthwash is bad news.
Whoa. Okay. So let's repeat that. If you use mouthwash and you exercise, you lose the cardioprotective effects of exercise.
That's exactly
right. Did I hear that right?
That's exactly right.
That's crazy.
Yeah, those are published data. In fact, I was on the doctor's show last year where we revealed that for the first time. So mouthwash is extremely bad. We're disrupting the microbiome. You know, we're 30 years into the microbiome project, and we know how important the microbiome is in the gut, but people have never paid attention to the oral microbiome. So there's a reason people don't take an antibiotic every day, because of the disruption it does on the oral micro or the gut gastrointestinal microbiome. It wreaks havoc. It causes a lot of health problems. So why would you disrupt the oral microbiome every day by using a mouthwash? It makes no sense.
But suppose I brush my teeth. That seems like a good idea.
That's the next thing. If you're using fluoride toothpaste, then fluoride's an antiseptic and it's killing the good bacteria. Oh. So you have to get rid of fluoride. And fluoride's everywhere. Unfortunately, it's in your toothpaste. It's in the municipal water, the drinking water. So you have to start buying a fluoride-free toothpaste, and you got to get fluoride out of your water. It's a neurotoxin. It kills your thyroid. And it's an antiseptic that kills the good bacteria in your mouth. It's bad news. It's a poison.
Okay. I think I use a salt-based toothpaste. I'll have to check for the fluoride. Yeah. But yeah. Wow. Okay.
Fluoride, those are the first two. So those are very simple. Those are cost savings, right? That didn't cost you any money. In fact, it's been saving.
Okay. That's great. I love that.
And then the next is antacids. There's clear evidence now that patients who have been on an acid, specifically these proton pump inhibitors, things like Prilosec, Prevacid, Omeprazole, these prescription drugs, you can now get them over the counter. Those completely shut down nitric oxide production. In fact, people who have been on PPIs now for 3 to 5 years have a 40% higher incidence of heart attack and stroke. So if you're on an antacid, you have to get off. There's no way around that. These drugs were never approved to be used chronically. But yet people take these every day for 3, 5, 10, 20 years. And there's severe consequences of using these drugs chronically. They are not approved to be used every day.
Okay. What else you got out there that disrupts this?
Well, those are the main three. Okay. And then the other thing you do, so if you just stop doing those, your body's going to reward you because you're going to feel better. Now we've eliminated the things that disrupt nitric oxide. Now, what can we do to improve production? So number one, we throw in some more green leafy vegetables, because those are the vegetables that are the most enriched in nitrate. We get moderate physical exercise, because exercise stimulates nitric oxide production. And that's why exercise is medicine, as long as you're not doing it while you're using a mouthwash or an antacid, right?
Note to self.
And then the other thing is just 20 minutes of sunlight a day. You know, there's certain wavelengths of light that will stimulate nitric oxide release from metals that are, you know, superficial in the skin, in the dermis. And then, you know, what I like is an infrared sauna. I sit in an infrared sauna every day. It provides the light therapy. It warms you up so you sweat. And, you know, sweating is one of our major sources of detoxification. And unfortunately, most Americans don't sweat anymore.
So I want to go to the infrared question. So infrared is just heat, right? And then there's near infrared, which is red light, which is a different thing. Which one are we talking about here?
Well, there's two. There's really three different wavelengths of light that promote nitric oxide production. And they're on opposite ends of the spectrum. So ultraviolet light, in fact, we use it in the research laboratory to cleave nitric oxide on proteins. So that particular frequency of energy releases nitric oxide. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, where you've got infrared and near infrared, those will release nitric. That frequency of that energy will knock nitric oxide off of metals. So it's around that near infrared. I can't remember exactly. Those data were published back in the 1950s, but it's around 540, something like that.
Okay, I remember my science here, but I think that the red light therapy lights are like 660 or 680, those sort of like tower of light things. And people, some of the manufacturers out there, they say, well, point it at your, some of them are whole body and some of them are just like, oh, put it on the skin of you, like your facial skin. But you're talking about cleaving it off of metals. I don't have any metal in my skin.
Well, no, of course you do. There's metalloproteins like, Your red blood cells have hemoglobin, and hemoglobin
has
iron.
Yes, of course. Oh, you're right. That iron, right?
Yeah. Okay. So you're full of iron.
That's true.
Yeah. And so the blood is very superficial. You know, all you got to do is just prick yourself with a pin and blood comes up. So that blood, that iron that's being exposed to that infrared light or even ambient sunlight is generating nitric oxide gas.
So I just want a point of clarification here. So some of these manufacturers, they'll have a light and it's, you know, a couple, I forget exactly what it is, 660 or 680 wavelength, is like very red light, right, pointed at the skin, and this will stimulate benefit of some kind. And is this nitric oxide production? Is that what that causes?
Well, part of it is nitric oxide, but there are other benefits of light therapy. Like, for instance, they stimulate the mitochondria to make ATP. So it's uh-huh. energy production. So there are a number of benefits of light. One of the benefits of light is nitric oxide. And those specific wavelengths of light are very well defined. I just can't recall that because I haven't read the literature in several years. But there are specific wavelengths of light that were published back in the 1950s that if you expose isolated blood vessels to these certain wavelengths of light, you get vasorelaxation.
Okay, so I went on Saturday. I went down to this facility and they've got these big banks of these red lights. And then I stand like a sandwich between these for 10 minutes and there's benefit, allegedly. Is this nitric oxide we're talking about?
Well, I think part of it can be. So there's kind of some caveats here. So the closer you get to the light, the deeper it's going to penetrate into the tissue, right? So if you're standing several inches away from this red light, there's going to be very little penetration into the tissue. If you're laying on it, you know, you're going to get further penetration in there and better therapeutic effects. Mm. The other important consideration is if you're nitric oxide deficient, and what the light does is it releases what we call photolabile stores of nitric oxide. So when nitric oxide is produced, it binds to proteins or it binds to metals, and then those stay there. And then we can knock them off and liberate the nitric oxide through light therapy. So if you're nitric oxide deficient, you don't have any of these photolabile stores to activate with the light. So the nitric oxide benefits of somebody that's nitric oxide deficient is going to be very minimal because there's very little nitric oxide stores to be released by the light.
Okay, Nathan, so I got an idea. An hour and a half before I go between my red lights, I drink some beet juice.
Absolutely.
I got it right?
You got it right.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Let me say this. Let me partly right. It depends on which beet juice you drink and where the beets come from.
Oh, God.
Because about 95% of the beet products that are on the market now do not do anything in regards to nitric oxide. There's no nitric oxide.
You're killing me, man.
What? In 95% of the beet products out there. The only thing they do is turn your pee and poop a bright pink and cause a little bit of anxiety. But there's no nitric oxide effect of those beets.
All right. Now you've wrecked my day. I got an $8 like bottle of like beet juice up there, and I have some every morning. Okay, so let's go back. I'm going to go to my red lights an hour and a half before. What do I eat?
Well, you could eat some spinach. You could eat some kale, arugula. Huh.
And that's better than the beet juice.
That's right.
Oh, okay. And suppose I ate a beet. Same deal?
Well, again, I mean, we published on this in 2015. We went to five cities across the U.S. We went to New York, L.A., Raleigh, Chicago, and Dallas. And we gathered vegetables from a known retail grocer. We brought it back to the lab, and we just measured the nitrate nitrite content of these vegetables. And what we found was it was as much as a 50 to 100-fold difference in the nitrate in celery from the grocer we bought it from in Dallas versus New York versus Raleigh and Chicago. So it depends upon where you live and what vegetable you're buying, because the farming practices are different. The soil conditions are different. The shelf life is different. There's so much variability, and there's no standardization for this in the vegetables or how they're grown. And we've known since 1948 to 2018, there's a 78% decline in all nutrients in plants grown and vegetables grown in the U.S. 78% decline since 1946 to 2018. All nutrients.
Okay. So now I'm really unhappy. So now My beet juice is no good. I'm not sure whether I've got a good beet or a bad beet. I may have good kale, bad spinach. Help me out here. What do I do?
Well, the best way to do it, and this is the era of personalized medicine, you have to go and get a micronutrient analysis to see what exact trace minerals and nutrients your body's deficient in. Mm. Here's what I'm confident in saying, that the foods we eat today, every single American is deficient in some one or more nutrients. Mm. And the data from the U.S. government, you probably can't rely on it, but even if it's unreliable data, it's very valuable data because it shows that 75% of Americans are deficient in magnesium. 95% of Americans are deficient in iodine. And another majority are deficient in things like selenium and chromium and all these trace minerals and nutrients because we're not getting them in the foods we eat because the pressures of feeding a growing population across the planet has led to less nutritious foods.
Mm.
So we almost have to supplement. But it's very difficult to apply a one-size-fits-all because your diet is much different with you buying food in Utah versus me buying and growing my own food here in Texas. We raise our own beef. We grow our own vegetables. So we're pretty self-sufficient here.
I just want to give a plug for the sponsor of this podcast, which is Inside Tracker, which I run on my blood every quarter. And so my stuff's good as I test it all.
Well, that's important. That's very important to know.
It is. But let's go. I want to get back to this idea of the way it's nitric oxide seems to control the reaction of the blood vessels. Vasodilation, vasoconstriction, I guess.
That's right.
So say something like Raynaud's disease. Which I'm not exactly sure what causes that, but it's sort of like you get a very severe cold thing happening in your extremities. Is that a nitric oxide related thing?
It is. They call it a microvascular disease. Mm. So it's related. So it's the small blood vessels that perfuse the digits that become chronically constricted. Mm. So when there's no blood flow to that, you get cold and the fingertips will turn purple or even black, and it's mm-hmm. very painful.
Right.
So what we have to do is basically just open up the circulation. We have to dilate those small blood vessels so now we can get blood and oxygen and perfuse those. And when you do that, the fingertips light up. And, in fact, we've been able to very effectively treat Raynaud's syndrome, the cold hands, cold feet, with our nitric oxide in a matter of 3 minutes.
And so you're talking about an oral product.
Yeah, so we've got a number of products on the market now for, I guess, probably the last 10 or 12 years I've been innovating nitric oxide products.
Okay, so this would be different than, you spoke earlier about the red light stuff. So, and I'm somewhat unclear here on systemic versus localized. So, if somebody has Raynaud's or something like that, a lot of people, when they get older, they, their hands and feet get cold.
Right.
Is this something that's localized to that area, or is this a systemic that's through my whole body? There's a problem.
Yeah, it's typically systemic. I mean, and typically if we're dealing with Raynaud specifically, that's typically a symptom of hypothyroidism because your thyroid is what controls your basal metabolic rate. So if your thyroid isn't working, you have low basal temperature, you have cold hands, cold feet, and then you combine that with microvascular dysfunction, a lack of nitric oxide production, then you basically just exacerbate the hypothyroid and you get Raynaud's syndrome. And that's when the small blood vessels of the digits and the feet just clamp down and there's no circulation whatsoever. And so the way you got to do that is, it's a systemic problem, so we treat it systemically. And that the nitric oxide will open up the small blood vessels. But until you fix the underlying problem, and typically it's a thyroid issue, then we can kind of mitigate the microvascular dysfunction with the nitric oxide. But until you fix the thyroid, you're really not going to fix the overall problem.
I know a number of people with Raynaud's. So you're a doc. What's the thyroid test they should get?
Well, unfortunately, most docs treat numbers. And so they'll tell them, even though they have the classical symptoms of hypothyroidism, they go and do their TSH, T3, T4, and the doctor goes, oh, well, you're normal. Yet they have cold hands, cold feet. They have thinning eyelashes. They have constipation, chronic fatigue. All of those are classic symptoms of hypothyroidism. So they're not treating the patient. They're treating the numbers. Hmm. And the what's considered normal thyroid function has changed dramatically over the past 40 years. 40 years ago, the labs what were normal then are what would be considered normal now, 40 years ago, would be completely abnormal. So the guidelines have changed because basically it's a bell curve. And I don't want to be like 98% of the Americans around me because 98% of Americans are overweight and unhealthy. So that's not normal. It's abnormal. But yet that's what the labs tell you. You're normal.
Oh, yeah. You can. That's one of my bugbears, the sort of like lowering of the bar on what's health. Like,
yeah, it's insane. Yeah. And it's no wonder, you know, I look at around at people when, you know, I'm retired now from academic medicine, but, you know, when I worked at the medical center, you see all these sick, unhealthy people and people my age and younger, and you go, well, and they're not getting any better. Yet they go to the doctor every week, every month, the same doctor, and they don't get better, they get worse. Mm-hmm. So the way medicine is practiced today is it's a complete failure.
I want to ask you about, you know, if we're talking about this capillary function, how does that relate to things like digestion? So you have, you know, a lot of blood vessels in there. And it seems as though there's sort of a loop here that's going between the saliva and the digestion back to the saliva. So very complicated. Help me out. How is this affecting my digestion?
Well, we regulate and control blood flow to regions where we need it. Right. So if we're not eating or digesting food, there's very little blood flow going to our gut. I mean, enough to maintain viability. You know, if we're working out, you know, we basically shut down. If we're running, you know, if you're running a marathon, you typically don't make urine because there's very little blood flow going to the kidneys because all the body's blood supply is going to supply the heart and all the skeletal muscle because those are the metabolically demanding organs that need all the blood supply. So let's consider if we just eat, then as soon as we can digest that food, we have increased blood flow to the gut. And what controls that? Well, it's nitric oxide. So nitric oxide is what controls gut motility to push the food through the entire gastrointestinal system. And it's what controls blood flow to now go to the intestines to extract all the nutrients and the material, the amino acids, all the raw material we get from our diet into the circulation so that now it can be circulated throughout the body and delivered to every cell in the body. So without nitric oxide, you get gastroparesis and you don't get blood supply to the organ, to the gut, until you don't absorb those nutrients. And so that's another reason a lot of Americans are nutrient deficient, because you may be getting it in your body, but if you're on antacids, you're not absorbing them. And if you can't make nitric oxide, you're not increasing blood flow to the gut to extract those nutrients from the digestive tract.
So is this why I should eat salad first when I'm eating my meal?
So yeah, there are these societal norms.
Is that right?
You know, when we eat a salad, so most meals are, salad's the first meal, right?
Yeah.
So now, like I'm a meat eater. So I produce my own beef, I grow my own beef, but I'm a beef eater. But it's known that there's this postprandial oxidative stress and inflammation from digesting this complex animal protein.
Uh-huh.
So the nitric oxide that you get from consuming the salad first actually prevents the inflammatory response from digesting that complex animal protein that you eat if you eat a, you know, an 8 or 10 ounce piece of meat.
It's a big piece of meat, Nathan.
Right. We're in Texas.
You're in Texas, right? Okay. So, interesting. Is that the TMAO protein that somebody told me about?
Well, the TMAO is a metabolite that, you know, it's become pretty popular in terms of a diagnostic.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. I'm not convinced it has any clinical meaning. It's one of mm-hmm. these things that you can detect from a high protein diet. And then it's a metabolite that's produced by the gut microbiome. But I'm not convinced this has any clinical utility in terms of disease progression or any meaningful endpoints.
I've actually been told by a gastroenterologist who I've had on the show that the whole TMAO thing really is highly variable depending upon your gut biome.
Now, of course, everything is depending on your gut biome.
So I'm going to eat my salad first. Okay, so that sort of gets my whole nitric oxide thing happening. So that means the next thing that I eat will be digested better. And you know, I can't have beetroot juice because God only knows I'm just getting red.
Maybe expensive, the wrong one.
Expensive red pea. We don't know.
That's right.
What about things like apple cider vinegar? So that increases the acidity in my stomach. Does that have anything to do with this?
Absolutely. Oh. So you have to have stomach acid in order to break down proteins into amino acids.
Okay.
Right? So if we don't have stomach acid, then the proteins that we eat, whether it's animal proteins or plant proteins, but they're foreign proteins, right? Our body is not ever designed to take up a plant protein or take up an animal protein. That's the job of our digestive system. So in the stomach is where protein is broken down into amino acids. But you have to have stomach acid being produced in order to break down this protein into amino acids. So let's take the example, if you can't make stomach acid because you have reflux and you've been on Prilosec now every day for the past 5 years. You drink milk, you eat a salad, or you eat a steak. That protein is not broken down into amino acids. So then you get, when the stomach empties into the gut, in the duodenum, there's undigested peptide fragments are then absorbed across the lining of the gut, and your body develops antibodies against it. Because now it sees it as a foreign invader, something that our body is not designed to see. Mm. So now it's the basis of all foodborne allergies. It's the basis of milk allergies, peanut allergies, all these food allergies that kids have today that we, and probably you when I was a kid, we didn't have all these food allergies, that we had restrictions for our kids going to school from no nuts or peanuts and milk allergy and all that. It's because now that people are overusing antacids. So you develop an allergy to everything you eat. Every protein that you eat isn't able to be digested into amino acids. Our body takes amino acids and we make human proteins out of amino acids. We don't take animal proteins or plant proteins and make human proteins out of it. We take the raw material, the amino acids from the plant and animal proteins, and then we make human proteins. Without stomach acid, you do not break down proteins into amino acids. The other thing is you need stomach acid to absorb B vitamins. You need stomach acid to absorb iron. You need stomach acid to absorb iodine, selenium, chromium. So if you don't make stomach acid, you become nutrient deficient. So going back to your question, taking apple cider vinegar before every meal is probably the best therapeutic strategy you could do.
Really?
Absolutely. Because you're acidifying the lumen of the stomach. It's basically right. Just acetic acid, a pH of about 2.
How much you taken?
Just a tablespoon is all you need.
Okay. All right.
That helps your body stimulate or basically make stomach acid.
Right.
Or to create an acidic environment for proteins, these trypsin and all that, to break down the proteins into amino acids.
How much time? And how much time, Nathan, between I chug a little of my apple cider vinegar. How much time between then and when I eat?
Immediately. The apple cider vinegar is going straight into your lumen of your stomach.
Nice. Okay. This is just like, I love
this. This is like biohacking at its best.
I wasn't expecting this. This is fabulous. I live at 7,000 feet. So, altitude is always sort of on my mind.
Right.
And if we're talking about vasodilation constriction, but altitude acclimatization has to do with more hemoglobin, right? Like red blood cell. But I don't know. Help me out.
Well, that's what people thought for a number of years. Mm. That if you go to altitude and so the partial pressure of oxygen is much lower at 7,000 feet where you are versus where I am at about 20 feet above sea level in Texas.
Okay.
So I breathe in more oxygen because of the partial pressure of oxygen here than what you do with each breath you take.
Yeah.
So when I go skiing in Colorado and I go 10, 12,000 feet. And so when we get on a plane in Texas, and 2 hours later, we're at 5,000 feet. Then another 2 hours, we're at 10 or 12,000 feet. And that's right. A rapid acclimatization, right? And a lot of people don't do well in that environment.
No one does.
Over a period of 2 to 3 days, then your body starts making more red blood cells and right. You increase your hematocrit. So you increase the oxygen carrying capacity of the red blood cell. So that's what people thought. And I'm not, it's still true, but it's just part of the story. Huh. The acute adaptive effects of altitude are an increase in nitric oxide production. And we did this by going to Tibet. We took people who lived in Tibet at 12,000 feet above sea level. These are the people that live at the base of Mount Everest. And yet they don't develop altitude sickness. They're the people who lead to the summit of Everest, right? So our question was, how do these people adapt to living in such extreme conditions and low oxygen? We measured their blood. We measured their saliva. We did forearm blood flow studies and found that these people make about 100 times more nitric oxide than we do living in the U.S. And then we went to Ethiopia, which is about 6,000 feet above sea level. And the people in the natives of Ethiopia have about, 50% of what people in Tibet do, but, 50 times what we in the U.S. have. So now that's how the body adapts. So, for instance, if I leave today and go to Colorado and at 10,000 feet or 7,000 where you are in Utah, then my body responds by generating more nitric oxide. And that's the benefits of altitude training. That's why Olympic athletes go to altitude to train, because not only are they making more hemoglobin to increase the oxygen carrying capacity of their blood, but they become a nitric oxide producing factory and increase the oxygen, the efficiency of oxygen utilization to make cellular energy. So now when they come back down to sea level, they're like a well-oiled machine. And that's why they can outcompete the people who weren't competing at altitude. So all of this is a nitric oxide related effect. In fact, we've seen this in COVID, because the problem with COVID is a drop in oxygen saturation, right? So it's like these people are living at 12,000 feet. They get, blood oxygen saturations of 78 or 80. They get critical. They go to the hospital. They give them supplemental oxygen, but yet they don't improve their oxygenation status. It's because they don't make nitric oxide. So now if we give nitric oxide, we improve their oxygen saturation, and we make them adapt to these extreme conditions.
So my friends who come here and they want to ski with me, and we ski at 10,000-11,000 feet, right. And they've got headaches and it's very hard for them to do anything. Should I then give them like a nitric oxide lozenger to like get their nitric oxide, and that'll help
within a period of 3 minutes?
3 minutes.
3 minutes.
I'm not going to tell anything about this because I really love skiing better than they do. So we're just not going to tell them about this.
Yeah, it's really a competitive advantage. It's kind of people's own little secret.
That's funny. I watched the Lance Armstrong thing last night. talk about competitive advantages. I think he was taking something stronger than nitric oxide. Well, I know he was. Absolutely. Right. Yeah. Didn't work out for him. What about things like, you can go to the store and you can buy these, I think it's called Cholera or Spirulina, these like super green little like seaweedy things.
Yeah, the Chlorella and Spirulina.
Yeah.
So it's like algae.
Right,
and
that stuff.
It's a superfood. I take it every day.
You do?
There's several benefits of this.
Okay.
So number one, it's one of nature's superfoods, right? So it's enriched in nitrate. So we're getting this source of nitric oxide, but it's also a binder. We produce a lot of toxins, but we're exposed to a lot of toxins in the environment, plus in the foods we eat. So when we try to maintain good health, we need something in our digestive tract to help bind these toxins and then excrete them. So that's part of the health benefits of Chlorella and Spirulina, as they act as binders and help bind the toxins, and then you just poop them out.
Do you chew them, or you chew them, or you swallow?
No, I swallow them. I take like 15 of, like 30 a day.
But why wouldn't you chew them so that it gets in the saliva in your mouth?
You probably could, but they don't taste great.
Oh, I'm into them. I think they taste awesome.
And I take like 30 at a time.
30? So oh, my God. Wow.
But they're small little bitty tablets.
Yeah, okay. I think on the box it says like take 2 or 3.
Oh, I take 15 of each, 15 of the Chlorella and 15 of the Spirulina.
Wow. Okay. All right, since we're into your personal protocol here, Nathan, so tell me in Nathan's world, what else are you doing?
Well, obviously, I take a daily nitric oxide supplement. I start out the day by taking the Corella and the spirulina. That's kind of my start my day off. I don't eat breakfast. I do a 16-hour fast every day. I usually eat my last meal around 5:30 or 6, and then I don't eat lunch until the next day around 11:30 or 12. Eat a light lunch, and then I eat a pretty well-balanced dinner throughout the day. I live on 800 acres. I'm a farmer and a rancher when I'm not traveling, so I'm working outside. I'm sweating a lot. But every afternoon, I do usually a 20 to 40-minute Peloton ride. Before that, I'll take a beet powder. I put in about 3 ounces of water, and I take that as a shot. So it improves my exercise performance. And then from there, I go get in an infrared sauna. I sit in an infrared sauna at 170 degrees for 20 minutes. And then I have a chemical-free pool. No chlorine, no chemicals. It's ozonated and UV light. So then I go cool off in the pool.
What's the temperature of your pool?
Like, well, I'm in Texas. It's probably
it's warm.
Yeah, it's 80 degrees.
Okay.
But in the winter, I still do the cold plunge. I'll go in and jump into the cold plunge.
I love the cold plunge.
I can't do that in summer. And then I have a hyperbaric oxygen chamber at home.
Oh.
Typically 2 to 3 times a week, I'll go spend an hour in the hyperbaric.
And you have one of the, there's some different flavors of those types. It's a 1.3 atmosphere one?
Yeah, I have the soft side, the 1.3.
Okay.
But, you know, I travel. I travel, you know, 130,000 air miles a year. So that's when I'm home. When I travel, obviously, I try to go to the gym. When I get to the hotel, it's very difficult to eat healthy when you're traveling. But I do my best and just try to work through it. But, you know, I haven't been sick. I haven't lost a day of work for illness in 25 years.
Wow.
And I've never been sick with COVID. I'm on a plane. We've got 26 centers around the U.S., COVID clinics where we're doing our COVID drug study. And I've never had COVID, never been sick with COVID. Haven't been sick with the flu in 25 years.
Wow. Can we do a blood transfusion? Can we change?
Yeah. So something's working.
Something's working. Yeah. Wow. Oh, and I wanted to ask you, you said you take beetroot powder. How do you know it's good beetroot? Because you just told me my beetroot juice is maybe good, maybe not. How do you know your beetroot powder is good?
Well, I have a nitric oxide analyzer, so I can actually test products.
Oh, of course.
About what works.
I don't know. So
I make my own beet powder, so I know it works. I develop these products. And so we take, and here's the problem. Most Americans don't like beets. In fact, 3 out of 4 Americans don't like the taste of beets. So I've created a really innovative beet product where we ferment the beets to concentrate the nutrients, concentrate the nitric oxide activity. But then we take the beet pulp, the beet color, and the beet taste out of it. So my beet powder is white. We put it in water. We add electrolytes to it because we know most Americans are dehydrated at the cellular level. And then we put mitochondrial ATP, actual energy, in this powder. So when you drink it, you're getting the benefits of nitric oxide. You're getting cellular hydration, and you're getting energy. So if your body can't make ATP, we give it for you. If your body can't make nitric oxide, we do it for you, and we provide the cellular hydration. So that product is unlike anything on the market.
So I'm kind of sporty spice. I spend a lot of time in the gym, and so if I'm going to go in and have one of my, you know, like 1,000-calorie workouts, should I drink beetroot powder beforehand? And if I do, what's the timing on that? Or do I just drink it like throughout the workout?
No, it has to be taken as a shot, because as soon as you put this powder in water, it generates nitric oxide gas.
Oh, okay. So I got to do it right away.
You can't sip on it.
Okay.
You put it in the water, you mix it, and then you take it as a shot. So now we're generating about 40 parts per million NO gas. So as soon as you consume it, you know, I've had people like within 3 seconds go, wow, I feel it.
Huh.
And then that'll give you the nitric oxide support that'll last through about a 4 to 5 hour workout. So, you know, it's great for, you know, if you're going to go play a round of golf, if you're going to do, you know, a half marathon or even a marathon, it's great for that. Or just resistance training in the gym. You want to spend an hour or two in the gym.
And so all of these, what I want to understand here a little better is we've talked about solutions that seem to happen almost immediately with nitric oxide.
And if a product actually generates nitric oxide.
If it does, fair enough. And then, you know, we've also talked about sort of long-term chronic conditions. So if what I'm going here is if someone has a more long-term chronic condition, what's the protocol? Like how much stuff do I have to, like, how often do I have to increase my nitric oxide to make my chronic condition go away? That's what I want to ask.
Well, you have to understand the etiology of the chronic condition, right? So we have to get to the root cause. But in terms of nitric oxide, again, nitric oxide is a gas when it's produced. So the technology we developed does two things. If your body can't make nitric oxide, we do it for you. But now we understand the enzymology and the biochemistry to the extent that we can repair that enzyme and make it functional again. So over time, we're making the body's ability to make its own nitric oxide improve. So we know how much nitric oxide is generated in a healthy, you know, 20-year-old person. We know how much nitric oxide is liberated from our technology. So if you take one lozenge in the morning, one in the evening, like my protocol, that gives you kind of 24-hour coverage. But if you're going to go to the gym and work out, then your demands on nitric oxide production are much different than somebody who's going to sit on the sofa for the next, you know, 6 or 8 hours. And that's the purpose of the beet powder, that if you're going to go and get a good workout in, then probably those two lozenges are going to sustain you to normal metabolic rate. But if you're about to go exert yourself, you're going to need more. And that's what we provide in terms of the beet powder. But then we have to get, you know, here's the other problem. Most Americans with chronic disease are over-medicated.
Yeah.
They're on 6, 8, 10, sometimes 12 different medications. And there's never a discussion of how the physician's going to get you off of those meds. It's always come back, I'm going to put you on more. And with that many drugs, your body cannot heal itself. Your body can't perform. And one drug is taken to mitigate the side effects of another drug. And it's this endless cycle and nobody gets better. And that's evidence today that management of chronic disease by Western medicine is an absolute failure. Because nobody wants to put in the work, David, like you and I, trying to eat right, understand their own physiology, do testing, get your ass to the gym, work out, sweat, eat a good diet. People want a magic pill. And unfortunately, there is no magic pill. You know, we think nitric oxide is extremely important, but it's certainly not a silver bullet. It's not going to cure your chronic disease if you don't take the steps to get your body better.
100%. Got to take responsibility. First, you got to know where you're at. And then you got to take responsibility to do something about it, because I have wonderful doctors. I don't ask my doctor what to do in the gym. I don't ask my doctor what to eat. It's just like not their thing, right? So you got to find somebody who's going to show you how to do that. Like,
that's right.
And it's, you know, unfortunately, it's work.
It is hard work. It's hard work to stay healthy. But, you know, the other side of that is, you know, it's devastating to live with a chronic disease. I mean,
yeah,
I
see that's a lot of work too.
They're completely debilitated.
Right. That's what
it's easier. It's easier to treat and prevent disease than it is to treat it or cure it. So prevention is the key.
I got a friend and she was, she's 64 and she was pre-diabetic, overweight, you know, all kinds of bad stuff. And she just decided to stop that. And now she's just like a physical dynamo. And she's like, that was a lot of work. But like being overweight and diabetes and all that, that's a lot of work too. So you get to pick the work you want. So people get angry when I say that, but I mean it's sort of
That's true. I mean, at some point, some people get sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah.
And then they take the effort and make the change. But unfortunately, most people don't. And that's what we're facing with. A lot of sick, overweight, unhealthy people walking amongst us.
I think I've seen this so many. I mean, you've probably seen the same thing, that there's this sort of disbelief in one's own agency over one's health, that one can actually, like, people so many people just, they're like, they just don't believe that, oh, if I eat this or I exercise or if I breathe this way or do meditation, like it's going to have any effect. But in fact, you have tremendous agency over your outcome. Yeah.
Well, you know, look, it takes time. You're not going to change your diet and go to the gym and 2 days later be a new human being, right? It didn't take you. You didn't get to this spot in 2 days. Don't expect to reverse it in two. It takes months and consistency.
That's right. Yeah. And I tell people like it, even if you go to the gym and I'm pretty consistent. If you go 5 days a week and you're doing all the right stuff and you're stacking it in the right order, it's still going to take you minimum 12 weeks to really change things. And most people are like, wow, I've done this for 2 weeks and nothing's happened. Well,
instant gratification. Right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it took you how many, 50 years to get into the shape that you're in. You're not going to turn it back in 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah. No, I get it.
Wonderful. So we're going to put some links in the show notes. If people are interested in some of the products that you use, we'll put those in there. I don't want this to be an infomercial for...
Yeah, no, I prefer... I agree. My job is not to sell products. My job is to provide the education so people can make informed choices. Yeah. On which products they're doing. Because, you know, unfortunately, in this business, everybody can say the same thing. And 99% of the products out there that are marketed towards nitric oxide do absolutely nothing. It's a waste of their money. I mean, I shouldn't say that. They may provide some good nutrients, but they do nothing towards nitric oxide.
So I just want to summarize. So we're going to eat our dark vegetables. We're going to stop using mouthwash. We're going to stop using anything with fluoride. Antacids, bad. What was the other one? Sunlight. Light, good. Did I miss anything? Apple cider vinegar. Yes. Yes. Which I've become
and
very
then,
fond
yeah, of. Exercise. Yeah. Exercise outside. Then you're killing two birds with one stone. You're getting the sunlight and exercise.
That's right. Okay. Super. I'm so happy we had you on the show. I know that there's so many people in my audience who have issues with, you know, blood pressure, cold hands, Raynard's, all that sort of stuff. So I think this is very helpful. I appreciate it.
Well, no, thank you. I mean, this my number one objective now is to educate the world on nitric oxide, because I'm truly convinced of spending 25 years in the trenches, in the basic sciences, that there's really not a single person nitric oxide wouldn't benefit. Mm. You know, we've got a drug company now where we're developing nitric oxide drugs for COVID, we've got a drug in phase 3 trials for ischemic heart disease, Alzheimer's. We've got a topical nitric oxide we're developing for diabetic ulcers, non-healing ulcers, and we're seeing remarkable effects. So I think as we move towards, you know, drug therapy, FDA approved drugs, the awareness around nitric oxide is going to be much, much better. And I think that this is going to revolutionize healthcare for the next 100 years.
Okay. Dr. Nathan Bryan, it's been a pleasure. I really appreciate all the information.
Thank you, David. My pleasure.
Take care.
Take care.
Thank you all for joining us on the show today. And a big thanks to the sponsors of this show, which make it possible. InsideTracker.com/Aegis. Check out all of their products. I'm a huge fan. And also go to Drink Element, spelled DrinkElement.com/Aegis. And we got some specials for you there. We're going to have both of those links in the show notes. Also, big thanks to Dr. Nathan Bryant, who has generously offered to give the listeners of this program discounts to some of his products. So those will be down in the show notes. As always, you have the opportunity to leave us up to a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on. You can also leave a comment. We love comments. And the only way other people learn about this show is through people like you telling them about it. So if you know somebody out there who you think could use the Super Age podcast, please let them know about it and subscribe. If you have any questions for Dr. Nathan Bryant or any of the other guests we've had on this show, david@superage.com. Send me an email. I answer all of my email directly and personally. Everyone, have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next week. Take care now.